All right, public safety, crime prevention, problems and finance will come to the sort of work. We haven't got enough people for a forum. And let's, do you want to start now or wait? Or what? Do you want to wait? Let's start now. You got your best part? Okay. Representative Mesmerl and House File 2528 will just begin the presentation. And when people walk in, if you don't mind if I interrupt you, then we'll bring it to the formal order. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd ask for a motion on House File 2528 and move to pass and refer to the general register. I guess general refer to the general register.
We'll have to wait for that movement until we get a quorum, but go ahead.
Okay. members, this is a bill that requires the Minnesota Department of Public Safety to provide accident reports to the Minnesota Department of Transportation if there's been damage to state-owned property due to an accident. And I have with me Mr. Eric Rudin, who is the legislative liaison for the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Yes, sir. If you want to state your name and title and begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And Mr. Chair, the Department of Transportation has been receiving accident reports from the Department of Public Safety when there is damage to trunk highway infrastructure. However, if you look at Minnesota Statutes 169.09, Subdivision 13, it talks about a person whose property has been damaged in an accident. And according to the Department of Public Safety, the DOT is not a person under the meaning of the law. And so that's where a problem has arisen recently. And so in order to continue receiving these accident reports, we'd like to clarify the law. And we did add an amendment in the Transportation Committee that it would be upon the request of the DOT these reports would be provided to us. Frequently we would have an accident number, so it would be hopefully quite easy for Department of Public Safety to provide these accident reports. In other cases, we might just know the location and the time of the accident, and so we would provide those parameters to Department of Public Safety, and then they would do a quick search and provide us the accident reports. We estimate that it would probably be a few hundred accident reports we're talking about on a monthly basis, but these reports bring in a great deal of revenue to the department that we use then to make the repairs. It could be upwards of $5 million annually. So it's quite important to the department that we continue to be able to access these accident reports. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Members, any questions? Still no quorum. Representative Masrell, can you tap dance for a while?
No, then you'd lose more members.
Oh, I don't know.
And this bill will, once we get a quorum, go to civil law?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And that should be its last stop before the general register.
Okay. Let's see. Representative Detmer isn't here either, is he? Oh, there he is. Representative Masrall, if you mind if we just lay this over temporarily until we get a quorum, then we'll bring you back for the motion and move it on.
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll temporarily lay over the 2528. Representative Detmer, would you like to come up and start the presentation of your bill? We won't take any formal action.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I have House File 2426. If you know, we have the Peace Office Memorial here on the Capitol campus here, and there needs to be some repairs done to that Peace Office Memorial. And I have a couple people, testifiers, that would like to speak to the group, to the committee. And if those testifiers will come down, Ed Reed, Jeff Beacon, and Mike Sabatka. Okay.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning, sir. If you'd state your name and your title and then go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Ed Reed, and I'm here representing LEMA, the Law Enforcement Memorial Association. I guess I should also say that I'm a surviving dad, having lost my son in the line of duty. We're here today to make you aware that the monument is in, I don't want to say dire, but it is in desperate need of repair. I have a handout for each of you that will outline the program.
Sir, if you don't mind if I could temporarily interrupt you back to, we just got a quorum now, so I'll bring it to order and then we'll begin again with you in just a second. Okay, Mr. Sparbu, take the roll, please.
Representative Cornish?
Here.
Vice Chairman Woodard?
Here.
Representative Mullery? Representative Doubt?
Here.
Representative Gauthier? Representative Grunhagen?
Here.
Representative Hilty?
Yes.
Representative Johnson? Representative Kelly? Representative Kiefer? Representative Kreisel? Representative Leidiger?
Here.
Representative Mariani? Representative McDonald? Representative Moran?
Here.
Representative Nornes?
Here.
Representative Slocum?
Here.
Representative Smith?
Here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sparby. Quorum been present. Would somebody like to move the minutes of March 6th? But Representative Nornes would like to move the minutes of March 6th. Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Now, Representative Masrold, you got to be anywhere, or your testifier, or would you like to get going on yours or come back, or would you? How would you like to do?
I have another fill-up, Mr. Chair, but I probably got another 10 minutes before I need to be up there.
Well, this one might take a little while, though, too, huh, Representative Detmer, or not? Okay.
Why don't you go ahead? Mr. Chair, the shortest bill I've ever carried. So.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay, as yes, I was sir. Saying, as I was saying, ladies, and start over from the top.
You bet.
No.
Okay. My name is Ed Reed. I represent LEMA, the Law Enforcement Memorial Association, and I'm here this morning to make you aware and advise you that the memorial is in need of structural repair. As you will see in my handout, that the four sides of the monument are held in place or held up by a metal infrastructure. Over the years, that metal infrastructure has corroded away and is in has the potential of failing, and subsequently the four marble walls will come down. You have in your handout a report from the structural engineer hired by the state who said in 2008 that he anticipated the remaining useful life of that metal infrastructure was 3 years. We're now heading into the fourth year. You also have in your handout a estimate at the time from the contractor on what it would cost to make those repairs. I think, as Representative Detmer said, it is a pretty short proposal. We need to make repairs to the monument. The administrative department that's responsible for maintaining it does not have the funds to do so. So therefore, we're here today seeking funds to make the necessary repairs. I have some additional color photos, if you would like to look at that, if they would help.
Sure, you can pass them around, and then are you done? Do you want me to the next testifier, or do you have anything more to say, sir?
I am prepared to answer your questions.
Okay.
I should say that we have the support of the Sheriff's Association, MPPOA, everyone in law enforcement. And on a personal note, I have to add that that monument, that site, if it is not near the top, it is darn close to being one of the most popular monuments that you have on the state grounds.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your testimony. Could you go ahead, officer, and state your name and title, and go ahead.
Mike Srbatka, deputy with the Ramsey County Sheriff's Department and Lima board member. Ed has the technical side of this. I have the emotional side. The men and women of law enforcement use this site on a regular basis, not only for our annual event that many of you attend on May 14th and 15th, and it's also used on a regular basis by departments to come down as a group to stand at the memorial on their own time. It's used by the Minnesota Cops Association for their annual blue light ceremony. It's used by Law Enforcement United on an annual event they do every year. And a personal note, I've seen many a cop down there probably contemplating a tough call or an emotional event he was at and using that as a location that he can seek some peace and maybe guidance within his own mind. And I've witnessed countless citizens, visitors to the state, walking around down there, enjoying the monument, taking pictures of it, hopefully bringing in a piece of that back to their family and their life. It would have meant to them to see it and enjoy it.
Thank you very much. Yes, and that memorial and some of the war memorials, you'll see family members lamenting after a loved one, sometimes in late hours of the night down there and trying to find peace. Representative Grunhagen, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I definitely support keeping this up and the sacrifice people made to have a monument like this, but when I look at the price, $186,000, do we have any comparables other places in the state repairing a similar type structure or in other states? The reason I'm not an architect, I haven't done any work like this, I'm just a lay person, but when I was on the school board, we had an old high school building, and it was almost as big as the SOB here. And we had to redo all the mortar on all the bricks on the building because it had deteriorated. And if I remember right, it was $190,000 for the whole building on the outside. And so when I look at $186,000, it just seems, I guess, I'd like to see some type of comparative data on other monuments that have been repaired, either in this that are similar, either in the state or other states. Seems a little high.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Grunhagen, the bill is asking for $55,000.
I understand. Okay. The total cost of the project is $186,000. Right? No.
That was a project that's 5 years old now. The state was replacing the thin blue line at the time. The project was not complete when the damage to the metal infrastructure was discovered. So the architect was just wrapping the two together. So the $150,000, $180,000 was the thin blue line. That's over and done with, all fixed, all.
Oh.
So you're looking at a dated report there, a dated estimate. The estimated cost to make the repairs to the monument at the present time is $55,000.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen?
Yeah, just to follow up, Mr. Chair. So is that in line with is there any other comparative data to just for similar type of repairs to monuments, either somewhere in the state or someplace else in the nation? One of the things I found with government is it's just good to have some comparative data on these cost estimates, but it's just a suggestion. Okay, I'm going to support the bill.
Okay, and any other questions? This does have fiscal note, and like some of the others, we're going to move it on, and then if it doesn't go to waiters, it means you can get the fiscal note taken care of, then we would bring it back here. Did you have something to add, sir?
Yes, I do, Mr. Cornish. My final person showed up. Do we have time for him to speak a few words?
If he feels the need, I suppose, yes. Just keep it short, and we've got another bill to go through, but I don't think your bill's going to have any trouble here.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee. Jeff Bean, the retired chief from Elk River Police Department. currently a state employee and previous president of LEMA. The Chiefs Association would just like everyone to know that they support this endeavor. I'm a member of the Minnesota Chiefs Association. The director's here. And as a retired law enforcement officer from 31 years experience, the big thing is we have 264 officers whose memories we want to keep alive. So that would be the push from the peace officers here in the state.
Okay. And if some of you folks don't know what LEMA is, they're the folks that look really sharp. Then we go to the officer's funeral in the white gloves and all the regalia and do a great job with the getting people in order and marching people here and there. So thank you for what you do, too.
Thank you.
Any questions for members? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a very quick question. I know there's going to be a lot to support for this bill, but you mentioned that that LEMA pursued funding alternatives with the State Historical Society and the Arts Board to no avail. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit on that and explain what the reasoning was behind not providing funding?
Go ahead, sir.
As I recall, the sequence of events, the state had told us they did not have sufficient funds. LEMA did not have any funds to contribute. Someone had suggested to us that perhaps the pursuing the legacy funds may be an avenue for us to pursue, and that's what we were alluding to with that comment.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, just one more quick follow-up to that. When the Arts Board told you that they did not want to fund it, did they give you some reasoning behind why they didn't think this was an effort that was worth their time and money?
As I recall, what they said, and this was secondhand knowledge to me, that they didn't believe that it met the criteria for the disposition of those funds. I can't recall that they were any more specific than that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, and I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Just something else popped into my head popped into my head. and this one's more for Representative Detmer. Did you think about possibly putting this in the bonding bill as well instead of seeking funding through this avenue?
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, no, it didn't come across my mind to go that route. I was asked to bring it to this committee, so this is where I am.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer, any other testifiers or any questions from the committee? Anybody out there in further testimony? If not, original motion? I guess we didn't make one yet. Because we didn't have a quorum, the chair will move House File 2426 be recommended to pass and move to the State Government Finance Committee. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, ladies.
Representative Mathrall, if you come back, and I apologize for my members being late so that you couldn't get your bill processed right away. House File 2528, Chair will move House File. Was he?
He's not.
Chair will move House File 2528, be recommended to pass and move to civil law. Representative Mazarol, yes. You can go continue where we were.
Mr. Chair, members, I think we pretty much gave all of our testimony, unless some of the members that have just arrived would like to hear on this. But again, as a reminder, this is a bill that just requires the Minnesota Department of Public Safety to provide accident reports to the Minnesota Department of Transportation where there's been property damage due to an accident.
Any questions from members? Representative Hilty.
So, Mr. Chair, being one of the members that arrived late, perhaps this has already been addressed, but I don't understand why we need a bill to do this. Do we have to order various departments and various state agencies to communicate with one another?
Can your testifier answer that, Representative Mathrall?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty. MnDOT has been receiving these accident reports under Minnesota Statutes 169.09, Subdivision 13, which states that a person who has had property damaged in an accident has a right to receive a copy of the accident report. However, recently the Department of Public Safety's attorney looked at that language, and the definition of person in Chapter 169 does not include a state agency. And so we're just looking to clarify the law here so that we can continue receiving these accident reports as we have been doing for quite a while. But the Department of Public Safety doesn't feel that under the current law they are allowed to give us these accident reports.
Help them keep them out of jail.
I don't know, Mr. Chair. It sounds kind of weird to me.
All right. Questions, members? If not, the chair will renew the motion for House File 2528 be recommended to pass and move to civil law. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye.
Okay. Chair,
Representative Lemire, are you here? Any co-authors here? Anybody want to move the bill for Representative Lemire? Representative Nornes, you'd like to move House File 2463?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, it's the wrong number, I think. Yeah, it is.
2463, that's correct.
Okay, Representative Nornes moves House File 2463 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register. Representative Lemire, you
go ahead and
proceed whichever way you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have an amendment.
Okay.
There's no number on the amendment, though. I don't know if you want me to do it as a oral amendment or.
If the amendment is unnumbered, Mr. Diebel, could you state the amendment? What it does, why we're putting it in there?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment was drafted by the Director of House Research, who covers alcohol, and he explains it as a clarification of the authority to purchase without a buyer's card is allowed, notwithstanding the requirements of Section 340A.401. I think the author probably would be able to explain it further as far as the need for it.
Mr. Chair?
Hey, Representative Lemire.
It was brought to my attention by the director from Alcohol and Gambling from Public Safety that we should reference the licensing part of our 304A301 deals with the wholesalers. So this just is referencing the licensing department, the licensing part in Chapter 340.
And the statute's in the handouts. For the DFL side, do you want to get your okay on this? It's an unnumbered amendment coming in late here. It seems to be technical in nature and not change a whole lot of substance. And so, that okay with you, folks? Yeah. Okay, the chair would move. What should we put a number on this thing? Or just an oral amendment? We'll call it the A1 amendment. The chair moved the A1 amendment to House File 2463, stated as page 1, line 19, after the period insert, notwithstanding Minnesota Statute 340A.401 in, and strike the word in. Okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
To the author on the amendment, I'm going to vote for it and your bill. But under the column of beating a dead horse, I would point out that the Republican committee brief on your bill suggests that arguments against is that it could create quality control issues. It's the first amendment I've seen that has no reviser date or number on it, so you've already got quality control issues on your amendment.
Sorry about it. It was a last-minute thing that was brought to my attention from Public Safety Department. I apologize.
It's okay, Representative Lemire. It'll happen to all of us sooner or later, probably. If there's no, we voted on that and accepted it already, right?
No, we didn't.
Chair moves the amendment as stated. I think I already did. I just didn't take the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, amendment's approved. House file 2463. And any other questions? Representative Hilty and then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, we just were discussing a bill in environment, energy, and natural resources this morning, which contained the provision for keeping state parks open in the event of a government shutdown and keeping our ability to issue hunting and fishing licenses in the event of a government shutdown, and now we have another one, and I suppose there are several other bills dealing with other aspects of the implications of a government shutdown for the general public. As a matter of principle, Mr. Chair, I think that in order to basically escape the wrath of the general public by making exceptions for anything that people in general would probably care about, which would not include state employees, unfortunately, I think what we're doing here, and I'd just like to make note of that, what's actually being done with all of these bills and amendments is to try to make any eventual disagreement between the legislature and bodies of the legislature or the legislature and the administration such that if you want to have government shut down, this makes it very easy because nobody's going to be mad about it anymore. And if you don't, it makes it very difficult. I hate to see all of these things coming forward, Mr. Chair. This thing by itself seems kind of innocuous, but if we keep in mind that this is one of a number of these proposals and they all have the same basic effect, I think it's the wrong thing to be doing.
So noted, Representative Hilty, and I don't know about the other shutdown provisions, but this one's about beer. And it might help numb the pain in a shutdown, but Representative McDonald.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wasn't there another question? Didn't someone have a...
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Johnson. I was going to follow.
Thank you for kindness, Representative. Mr. Chairman, question to the author. Just curious now, the a license is purchased by the business from the city, the municipalities, and now the state has a card that they have to pay $35 for, and I was aware of this last year. Of course, we all were when we went to our stores and wanted to maybe engage in this purchase, and we couldn't. So curious, why did the what's the legislation behind a $35 card that each business has to have permission to buy from a provider each year? What was the purpose of this $35 card?
You know what? It's a good question, but we haven't really given you guys a full vetting of the bill yet. We weren't into questions about the model testimony, so maybe as part of that answer, you could just go ahead how you wish. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. The buyer's card is to tell the distributor that the restaurant, the bar owner, the off sale is in good standing with the state of Minnesota. And I, if I could, Representative McDonald, I could have Ms. Pasek here from the Minnesota Beverage Association elaborate onto that.
Could you state your name and title and go ahead and give your full testimony? That might take away a lot of the questions when we come back. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Sarah Pasek. I work at the McGrann Shea Law Firm, and we represent the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. And this is a bill that Representative Lemire put in, and we saw it and think it would be a good idea. Last session, So I represent private retail bars and liquor stores. And they receive their license from a city or a county, whoever the licensing authority is in the jurisdiction where their establishment is. And in order to get the license, they have to meet various standards by different cities. They undergo a background check. They have to, you know, not have any compliance check failures and different things like that. So they get their license from a local government. And then after they get that license, they take the valid license to the Department of Public Safety and they get what's called a buyer's card, this $35 buyer's card. And then the distributors and beer wholesalers get a list of all the valid buyer's cards. And so when they make deliveries, they know that the place they're making a delivery to is a business in good standing. They have a buyer's card, they have a valid license. And everybody likes the way the system works. We don't have any objection to having the buyer's card. The wholesalers and distributors think it's a good idea because they know that they're making deliveries to properly authorized locations. When the shutdown happened, there were liquor stores and bars that had valid licenses, but their buyer's cards became in limbo because of the shutdown. And so they were running out of supply. They could still be open and sell what they had, but they couldn't get any new deliveries. And so this would allow, if you have a valid license, it would allow your buyer's card to continue until the time that the state is able to reissue your buyer's card. MLBA brought a special, brought a petition in front of the special master during the shutdown to try and get the buyer's cards reinstated or allow people to get deliveries. And I think the shutdown ended before the special master ruled on our petition. And so I think this legislation would help should we ever be in that situation again.
Okay. Members, I think Representative Johnson had a question before. Sorry about passing you over.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly a second to Representative Pilty's comments on ongoing exceptions to shutdown issues. And secondly, just Representative Lemire, we looked at this bill in Commerce as well, and one of the concerns was potential omnibus liquor bill. And I don't know enough about the amendment that we put on to the extent that that might have any effect. Does it have any effect? I mean, you made it clear that you had no interest, intent of creating mischief with a big liquor bill. Is that still the case?
Representative Chair, I have no interest in making it a big liquor bill. Yeah. This is how it's going to be the whole way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The impact of a government shutdown has huge impact on a large number of people. Why do you think this exception is warranted?
Representative Lemire.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, because this is people's livelihoods.
Drinking?
Their businesses. This is what they do. They sell liquor. They have weddings. They have anniversaries. And if they're unable to purchase their liquor, to have their parties and to sell their drinks, they are unable to pay their mortgages. They're unable to feed their kids. And I don't think disagreements between politicians should have a direct impact on the private sector as this almost had.
Representative Moran.
So the reason to avoid a shutdown is for government to come to an agreement, right, and to do their work in a timely manner, right, because we want to avoid that. So to give exception is only to, in my opinion, is only to lessen the impact in government doing their job in a timely manner. And it says, you know, kind of like a so what to members of the community. And government don't have to come together and agree. We can shut down because we're given all these exceptions for life to go on like everything is fine, and which is not. And we have, you know, different exceptions for people to enjoy the parks and recs and to sell alcohol. But we have government workers who will be impacted hugely in their families. And, you know, I would love to bring a bill to, you know, support government workers too, because they have a livelihood that they also have to support. And again, I think we want to avoid government shutdown, but we also want government to do their job in a timely manner, because it has impacts and implications when we don't.
Representative Lemire.
Again, I don't think the private sector should feel the pain because politicians can't come to agreement. I understand. I don't like that the public sector, the government workers also feel the pain, but they're part of the public sector. There's no reason that we should use the private sector's pain in order to move our agenda forward.
Representative Moran?
And I agree that no one should feel the pain. But
Pardon me?
I agree that no one should feel the pain of a government shutdown. But that is kind of like the price we pay when we don't come to an agreement and do what's best for the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lemire.
Point well taken.
Representative Leidiger.
Well, I'm going to talk somewhat in opposition to your line of questioning. There should be no pain, or it should be as minimal amount of pain as possible to the public as we work through these government issues. And what we find is that there's one position that wants to inflict as much pain as possible, it seems like, as much pain as possible, and put everybody, the private sector, down on its knees for virtually no reason whatsoever. It makes no sense to do it that way. And you've got another position that says, look, let's get as many people working and keep working as possible, and let the politicians work on it with a minimal amount of disruption so that people can, in fact, go on with their lives. So I just thought I should talk on a line of questioning or in comments very different from the way that you've been asking your questions. So, Representative Lemire, is this this is designed to really keep a good portion of our the bar owners in particular and package stores open during a government shutdown? Can you just confirm it?
Go ahead,
Mr. Chair. Representative Leidiger, that's exactly what this is doing. It's keeping the private sector working.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to take the conversation in a little different direction as to point that why this bill is important. From being in local government for over 10 years, we issued liquor license to establishments, and they're vetted very carefully. We don't do it haphazardly just for fun. We don't do it just so we can have a drink occasionally. We do it because we take it very seriously, and these businesses pay thousands of dollars for the liquor license. They're legitimate, they're under strict ordinances, and they follow the rules. The distributors like the bill. They like the $35 buy-in card because it offers legitimacy. Fine. You can have it that way. I see a bigger government looking over little government saying, well, municipalities and counties, we're really not sure that you are accurate. You may have made some mistakes. We're not sure how legitimate your licensing procedures would be, so therefore we're going to establish a law that makes every business buy a card for $35 to make sure you're legitimate, because you city folks, really, in counties, we're not sure you're really capable of doing that. So although it may be minuscule, a $35 fee, it's not necessary for the government to say, no, you can't have purchase alcohol during the shutdown because you don't have your $35 card. I would submit that $35 buyer's card should be completely dismissed and done away with. I don't think government should interfere at the state level when the local level have already vetted and had the license and issued it and done their homework in the process in the first place. So, yeah, you want to have a pain so that it's no big deal, you know, if the government shuts down, everybody has pain. Well, this is the $35 buying card, which is not necessary, in my opinion, anyway, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels that way, because if it was really important, it'd be a $1,000 buying card. The license is enough for the local level. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Lemire, for bringing this to our attention, so businesses and weddings and bar mitzvahs and anniversaries can continue if we don't get our job done on time. Thank you.
We have Representative Mariani, Moran, and Doubt coming up. Representative Mariani.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and obviously the bill, I'm sure to the chair's probably slight disdain has gotten us into some other conversations, but, you know, they're good conversations to have. You know, Representative Lemire, I think your bill's fine, and I'll be supportive of it. But I do think that there's a couple of points that have been raised here that I think need to be articulated continuously. You know, one, and Representative McDonald, I respect your opinion, but quite frankly, all authority relative to these issues come from the state. You know, for us to have, you know, thousands of jurisdictions, you know, dictating quality and you know, who gets the sale, I don't think any of us really want to do that. And so obviously there has to be some kind of oversight, and oversight costs money, and, you know, $35, you know, to me doesn't sound like a, you know, like a overburdensome issue. And that ties to, I think, a bigger issue here, which the government does have an interest in making sure that not just anyone can sell alcohol. I don't think there's great disagreement here across the, I don't think there should be. You know, the one of the issues I think that Representative Moran, you know, has tried to raise here is that, you know, our political posture and rhetoric aside, there is a strong interplay between government and the private sector. And when it works well, what it means is it's good for the private sector, and it allows the government to be able to face its citizenry and say, look, you know, we're looking out for your best interests. You know, there's good uniform standards. Everything's fair. Everything's transparent. And, you know, when we had the government potential, you know, budget shutdown at the federal level, it would have been good to have this conversation. I think there was a lot of irresponsible behavior that was happening at that place. You know, I can't speak for, you know, the executive branch. You know, our shutdown last year, I'm a legislator. I have to accept that as my fate. You know, I'm elected here to be able to get the job done. You are as well. All of you are. And we can point our fingers, and we will, during the election about whose fault it is. But ultimately, the only way to approach this, just like any other business or nonprofit, is to assume responsibility here. And I think what Representative Moran was trying to raise is that if we start carving out exceptions, it makes it easy for us not to assume our responsibility. And I think she's wisely, you know, pointing out that, you know, let's make sure we're not creating a slippery slope here where, you know, we wind up not delivering all the vital services that we need to have in the state of Minnesota. Except for exceptions here and there, but, you know, other areas, we won't deliver those. And so anyway, I just think, you know, it's an interesting political debate over public versus private. In my mind, you know, they have a very important relationship that are rightfully dependent upon one another. And Representative Lemire, I think your bill is fine, but I enjoy the fact that it's raised these kind of issues for us to have a serious conversation about what our responsibility as a legislature is, which I don't think is to create exceptions as much as it is to make sure that we just get our jobs done.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mariani. That is exactly what I was stating. But I also want to be clear that my opinion is not about trying to raise any type of conflict or what's the word you guys used?
Pain.
Pain on anyone. That is not the intention, to try to inflict any type of pain, whether it's the private sector or the public sector, because I realize that families are being impacted both ways. And I think the key of the government is to ensure that we're not, you know, intentionally causing any kind of pain or conflict on families. But it is to say that, as Representative Mariani stated, that we need to come together and negotiate and take care of our business, because in the end, it has impacts, whether it's the private business sector or the public sector.
Thank you. Representative Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm reluctantly wading into this conversation because my blood pressure was increasing as I sat here. I think it might help all of us to just remember why a government shutdown happens. It happens because the legislature and the governor have failed to reach an agreement and set a budget for the state for the upcoming biennium. It's not for political purposes. It's not for feeling the pain. It's, unfortunately, we can't expend money if we haven't gone through the proper procedures of setting a budget, and our Constitution outlines how we do that. If we start talking about, using words like, wanting people to feel the pain or making sure that we get our job done, we're using a government shutdown as a tool, and we're using it for politics. I mentioned in a committee earlier this session, I didn't come here to the legislature for good politics. I came here for good policy. And this bill is good policy because what it does is it separates something that has no fiscal impact from a government shutdown. The purpose for a shutdown, as I stated, is we don't have a budget. If we're not expending money on this purpose, this private sector segment of our economy shouldn't be affected by the government shutdown. And not wanting to pass this bill says that we want the private sector to be affected by a shutdown. And what that tells me is that we feel that it's more important that we do good politics here and not good policy, and that we want the private sector to feel the pain. So I think it's important that we remember what we're here to do and what we're not here to do. And what we're not here to do is to have, impacts on the private sector for political gain. And, I think if we all take a second and just remember what we're doing here and what the purpose of a government shutdown is and why it happened, I think we'll all come to the same conclusion that, and ultimately we'll end up with a unanimous vote on this bill out of this committee.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you. I'm going to wade into it one more time, and just briefly, because Representative Mariani, you talked about the authority that the government has, and rightly so. But here's what catches me: the authority comes from the people. And it's the people that prop up government, the people that created government. And it's the people that shaped the various different functions that government has. Then for the government to turn around and after, creating these programs for licenses to do this and that and this and that, and the government turns around and says, well, because a few conflicts that we might have, we're going to shut the whole system down. We're just going to stop as much commerce as possible. Is absolutely ludicrous. And the reason why I'm taking the second bite here is because not only here, Representative Moran, have we heard this, the issue of pain, that we got to have pain. But I've heard it on all the other committees that I've been on. We've been talking about this because, as we know, there's several bills coming out. And I think we just lose that whole perspective that we're here to serve the people. We're not here to have this grand authority over them and just be able to stop commerce in its tracks because we can't agree, the executive branch and legislative branch. No. We should have as much commerce going on as possible. And that's why we're seeing all these bills. We're here to serve the people, not to sit there and disrupt their lives. What, because we can? I think we lose sight of what we're here for. And it's got to stop. Thank you.
To that point, Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, to that point, Representative, we're probably not in great disagreement here. The issue for me is that government is the people, and the people want safe business transactions to happen in our society. They don't want beer that's spiked with God knows what. that someone's going to drink and get sick. I mean, we spent weeks in this committee talking about those very issues with some of those weird marijuana knockoff, you know, products, and we're saying, you know, it's important for us to regulate that. And you and I voted for that bill. We regulated a private industry, a small mom-and-pa shop somewhere that was selling God knows what, because they could. And now we provided a legal framework. But we did that on behalf of the people. So, frankly, I don't think we're in great disagreement here, but, you know, I hope that your arguments don't lead me to vote against Representative Lemire, because if this issue is about how you know, government is separate from the private sector, you know, and my vote here is to affirm that, then I'm not sure I'm supportive of that bill. My point is that I think that there is an important relationship between the people through their government with the private sector, and when it's done right, it works well for the people and for private industry. That's my only point.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank Representative Dowd. Policy over politics, I completely agree. And thank you, Representative Lemire, for bringing it forward. This is just a continuation of business, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
And Representative Woodard, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also just a quick comment. One of the things we have to remember here is that we're having this debate now because it is really the governor's and the legislature's prerogative to solve these problems proactively and not put it in the hands of the judiciary in the unfortunate event that we do have a shutdown. So that's why we're having these conversations and this debate, and I think we just need to remember that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Moran.
And I guess I have to be clear about this also, and thank you, Mr. Chair, is that I'm not politics here. I have no reason. I'm pretty safe. So my comments is not around politics, but it is about creating fair and equitable policies. But you brought up a really good comment about the power is in the people, right? It really, really is. And if people can just take hold of that as they did in the shutdown, because what happened, government didn't come through. And when government doesn't come through, people are impacted. And it's because that people got outraged at what was going on that people spoke up and made government come together and come up with some type of solution. So it is about the power of the people. Because when we don't do what we need to do here, it is impacting real people's lives. And had, you know, as a first-term legislator, I thought it was outrageous that we even went into a government shutdown, that we even let it go that far. Outraged. And so what many of the people outraged about it. And so, you know, when we do that, it has impacts. But I agree with you totally. It is about the power of the people.
Okay. Now, back to the bill here. We any more questions? You know, like meet the press here. But that's why our committee is so much fun. If there are no more questions anywhere, and Representative Hilty, I didn't mean to make light of your first comment there. It's just that I remember last year, too, the couple of the things was that people had had to run off the beaches, and then the other ones were afraid about losing their beer. And so it was there were two pretty big things that were impacted, all right. So, if there are no more questions, Chair would renew his motion for House File 2463, recommended to pass. Did we amend it?
As amended.
As amended, and move on to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Now, Representative Woodard, House File 1607. And you can make your motion what you would like to. Where it would go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a DE1 amendment, but the motion will be to pass this and refer it to the House Transportation Committee.
Okay, Representative Porter has moved his bill. Would you like to take up the amendment here? Is it the DE1? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There is a DE1 amendment, and
I believe that should be in your packets now or being handed out now. I apologize, don't know why it wasn't in the packets, but we noticed that when we sat down, and so I know staff was working on getting a copy of the DE-1 amendment. The DE-1 amendment basically takes what I presented to the Government Operations Committee last session and refines it a little bit and takes in some of the Senate discussions that have occurred and some of the collaboration they've done with both some of the privacy advocates who had some concerns that this would be a super secret organization. So we've allayed some of their concerns there. And we also wanted to make sure that some of the groups that are involved in the Capitol today and Capitol operations, including groups like the Minnesota Historical Society, also had the ability to consult with this group. So the DE-1 amendment takes all of that into account and puts the bill in the format in which I'd like to discuss it, Chair.
Yeah, let's. Why don't you make a motion to move your amendment?
Okay. I would like to move the DE-1 amendment for House File 1607.
The Representative Woodard moves the DE-1 amendment to House File 1607 to get it in the proper form. He'd like it. Do we wait on the question until after? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Representative Johnson had a question on the amendment.
Yeah, just.
Or maybe the whole bill.
Yeah, just briefly, Mr. Chair. I know that the bill previously had a fiscal note, fiscal impact. Does this new delete all amendment that we just passed, does that also have fiscal implications?
Representative Woodard, if you go ahead and answer that, and then after that, if you want to go ahead and finish, you had a longer presentation on the bill, go ahead, but sure. Go ahead and answer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I don't have a fiscal note that would be any different than what we've discussed in the past.
It'll be the same.
And I guess I would kind of refer that as well. I don't have a fiscal note. Do you have one in your possession? My understanding is there was no, the fiscal note basically said zero. So I haven't seen an additional fiscal note. And if you have one, I guess I would like to see that.
Mr. Rawls, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, looking at the original the language in the original bill, on line 2.28, it says they would do this within the limits of existing resources, so no fiscal note was requested. I cannot speak to if the amendment would have any reimbursements to this new advisory committee, and perhaps a fiscal note needs to be requested on that, but the original bill did not have a note request submitted.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can look into it further and talk to Representative Woodard as need be.
Okay. Representative Woodard?
And Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, the intent is that there would be no fiscal impact, that this is done within existing resources. And in talking to stakeholders, that would be how this would happen as well. And Mr. Chair, there's also an A1 amendment that that we've discussed as well that I would like to move over.
Okay. Well, let's do the chair's amendment.
Okay, I believe that's the A1 amendment.
Right. Oh, okay. And I would like to do an oral amendment. I don't think this one has been passed out. The motion would be to amend 1607, the DE-1 amendment, actually. So that you get there on page 3, line 26. You delete everything after the period on line 26, and then on line 27, right underneath it, delete everything before spending. And what this does basically is it talks about a report, and the report shall include draft legislation to implement any recommended changes. I just think that's the legislature's job, and I'd rather see us come up in our research with the draft legislation to implement and recommend any changes. I think that makes more sense rather than have somebody bring in a draft to us. Any discussion on that amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative
Woodard. I concur with you and think that I certainly support the amendment.
Okay. You've heard the amendment as stated. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And then did you have another amendment, Representative Woodard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one final amendment, and this is an oral amendment here on line 3.17. Right after we talk about the Architectural and Planning Board, comma, we would insert
the director of the Minnesota Historical Society as another individual in which the committee would confer with.
Which, say that again, line 3.17?
Yes, Mr. Chair, line 3.17 of the DE1 amendment.
Uh-huh. And you want to?
To add the, right after the planning board, comma, would add the Minnesota, the director of the Minnesota Historical Society.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chair, that, and we have Mr. Kelleher here to testify if we need to on why that's important, but very briefly, it's because the Minnesota Historical Society, of course, does quite a bit at our Capitol and is kind of our eyes and ears and is certainly a group that the committee would like to consult with about any sort of security issues that may arise.
Okay. And Mr. Diebel, did that additional amendment make sense grammatically? I think it looked like it was okay.
Mr. Chair and members, the only thing I'd add is to add a comma after society.
Mr. Chair, I disagree with that. No, I'm just kidding. The comma's good.
All right. Do folks understand the amendment as it was stated? Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Okay. Now we have the bill in the final form. And did you have another testifier, you said?
No. Thank you, okay. Mr. Chair. I do not have any other testifiers. The State Patrol is here. If we have additional questions for what the State Patrol is doing today for Capitol security and some of the reasons why we want to put together this committee. And just a little background, after the Congressman Giffords was shot and down in Arizona, there was concern about what we're doing here at the Capitol from a security standpoint. And so the governor did call for a temporary commission to be put together, a task force to be put together, to look at what we're doing today within the Capitol complex, including the Capitol itself, the state office building, the judiciary, all of the Capitol complex, and are there any areas in which we have deficiencies, any areas in which we're not being consistent with our security. And what we found during those meetings, Mr. Chair, is that there's lots of good people doing lots of good things, but the coordination of those efforts really does need some additional organization to it and some structure around it. Also an ability for the experts who are dealing with the Capitol complex security to be able to suggest changes. So the bill as it stands today, and it's my intent that this commission does not make, or this committee does not make decisions regarding things like concealed carry within the Capitol, would not make decisions that says that you would that would indicate we need to put up metal detectors at the Capitol. And I will tell you personally that during these meetings, there was an overriding concern that we make sure that the Capitol is open and accessible at all times to the people of Minnesota, and that if we can find ways to mitigate the risks and concerns, that we would not have to go to drastic measures like that. So I think that certainly that's the intent. The other thing, the second component of this bill that's important is the fact that we recognize there wasn't a real structure for the protection of other members of the government besides the governor, including state representatives, who might be threatened, and the State Patrol was not real clear on what their role would be in that sort of event. And so this clarifies that and says that the governor would be able to direct the department to provide services, security services, if they deem necessary in those kinds of events. So, Mr. Chair, that's the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Woodard. Would anybody from the patrol like to come down and say a few words, or would you pass? Okay. All right, good to see you here anyway, and we thank you for what you do for us keeping us safe here. So. All right, members, any questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Woodard, I know Representative Loeffler's been real involved in this as well, apparently. Is she on board with the delete all that we passed here? Is she, as far as you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yeah, and she is a co-author of the bill. Mm-hmm. The changes that we made were based on some of the concerns that were coming up with that came up by the privacy advocacy group, as well as the Minnesota Historical Society. Those are the concerns that we discussed during the commission. I can't sit here today and tell you that she is fully on board with those. you have my commitment that I will certainly reach out to her and make sure she is. I don't think, based on our conversations, there's anything in here that that she would find objectionable, but you have my commitment that I will reach out to her to confirm that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And as long as the patrol and DPS is here, I'd like to make an outward lobby attempt that any future security keep in the hands of the state patrol and licensed peace officers, if that's possible. So, any other questions? If not, will Representative Wood, do you renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew the motion that House File 1607 be passed and referred to the House Transportation Committee as amended.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Any questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you very much. The next meeting is Tuesday, March 13th. And any questions? If not, meeting adjourned.